So I'm Cantonese, specifically Chinese, so I'm really loud. If anyone know Cantonese, we know to be loud. Can you guys hear me okay? On the back? Okay. So I'm going to pretend to be speaking in the mic. So I'm going to talk. This is my thank you for bringing me in again. This is my third one here, Friday Coffee Meetup. My last one was actually about 5 years ago. I actually did I was pretty heavily involved in Innovate Pasadena. My company has been Pasadena for 13 years now. So the last talk I had was something similar, but it was the concept of a product design sprint. Some of you guys might have heard that if you guys are in product, etc. So, but it's been about 5 years since I last talked about it. So I thought I would come in again to the community and just share a little bit more. Since 5 years ago, we built many, many more products for enterprises. So I thought I would come in again today to share with you guys some of the things I've learned as well too. Before I get started, I'm going to talk a lot about me. But I know there are a few faces that I recognize, but just by show of hands, I want to make sure that we are talking to the right audience too. How many of you guys are actually, when I say digital products, right? So these are tools, apps, et cetera, that are only purely on digital, which is, you know, laptop, mobile, even digital installations, tablet, et cetera. Any of you guys are actually building products right now? Anyone wants to build product? So I guess the rest of you guys you guys can tune out. So let me just start by saying that what I have learned and why I'm talking about this, and again, specifically, right? Digital products nowadays, especially we live in a digital world, but the way that we approach digital product is basically anything software, right? Anything software that is built on now the digital platform, mobile, tablet, laptop, etc. So I'm going to spend a couple minutes just talk about a little bit my background, and then I'm going to spend most of my time talking about the three things I've learned. And then five things that you can actually do, hopefully, that take you back to your company or yourself if you guys want to build product, right? So the next few slides is all about me. So it's my time. So I was an engineer by trade. I was born in Hong Kong. I'm Cantonese. Again, you guys still can hear me, right? Yeah. It's really loud. I'm just going to get louder and louder, by the way, as I talk. So I was an engineer by trade. I started my career as a software engineer in Silicon Valley in the dot-com days. I love building things, and I live up to the Asian stereotype as, you know, pretty good at math. But I did not go into law or business or doctor like my parents wanted me to. And so instead, I went into software. You know, back in the dot-com days, there was no such thing as digital product, etc., right? So everything was like software-based, etc. So I was an engineer for a while, and I realized that while I was pretty good at faking my way into building things, but what I really like to do, which is kind of contrary to kind of most engineers, I actually love to talk to people. And I love to not only sit behind the computer, but in front of the computer and telling people what to do. So I started I moved my career through as a software engineer, being CTO, and I moved back down to LA where I went to school here. I joined a few advertising agency, and at that same time, Shy Day, which is a large one in Marina Del Rey. So my background moved from software into pure advertising because that's what hot and that was cool back then. And then I started consulting, and I realized this was early 2000s, that because I've been very fortunate to be able to work with a lot of brands, one of the brands, of course, was Apple. I worked with the Apple team on building the Apple Store back in 2000s. So because of that, that's kind of my call to fame, and my name got kind of brought out in also the Silicon Valley, but also in LA. So I started talking to a lot of entertainment companies. I started consulting a lot. So for about 6-7 years, I've been doing consulting as a technical consultant, and eventually moved into product consultant. So as that, and so I chose to be a consultant because I like to talk, but at the same time I realized that there is something unique perhaps that they're looking for from an engineering background that can bring, and especially working in a very kind of creative world in advertising, and moving all the way back to kind of software, there is something maybe perhaps unique that I can offer to these companies. So I've been fortunately worked with a lot of Fortune 100 companies, but at the same time, my passion, of course, was still startup. So I started my agency 14 years ago now. I moved back to Pasadena. That's where I actually started the agency 14 years ago. I started working with a lot of startups around here. Idea Lab, I still work with them right now. But one of the things that I really like to do, even to that date, is I choose to be a consultant because I do like the fact that I would be able to help people not only to bring a product to life, but actually guide them through the process. I'm a CEO by accident, honestly. You know, as a consultant, as you guys, and if you guys are anyone that started out as a consultant, when I get my tax bill, I'm like, what the hell? So that's when I decided to start my company. And one thing led to another. I've been a CEO of my company. We have 4 offices globally now. Pasadena is still my home. Hong Kong, Denver, as well as San Francisco as well, too. So, but one thing that I really enjoyed, or I guess unique perspective, is what a term I learned in advertising called structured chaos. And especially in building things, right? It's chaotic. You know, at the end, the product is pretty, etc. But that's, the process of that is complete chaos. So, and especially if you know anything about advertising, the definition of advertising is chaotic. So one of the things that I've been brought on to a lot of consulting is how to put some structure around all the chaos. So one of the things that I really started realizing through my days of, you know, whether as an engineer or a consultant or a CEO, is the ability to kind of navigate through that chaos has served me personally pretty well. And one of the things that, and this is no surprise to you guys, right? Then going back to kind of why I'm here today to talk about building products, you know, a lot of ideas, there's so many ideas out there, right? Especially with the rise of startup, etc., the digital world. You know, anyone can build anything, especially now. I've seen so many people like, oh, are you an expert in something? Yes. Why? Because I read a couple of articles about how to do things, etc. There are so many information nowadays on the internet that anyone can pretend or fake it till you make it to be an expert. But one of the things that you can't hide, right, is execution. You can have great ideas. Great ideas come from everywhere. But one of the things that I've seen in my career is that you can't hide from better execution, especially in technology, right? It's either work or it doesn't. You know, design is subjective. Technology and development is either work or it doesn't. So one of the things that, before I get into the meat of this, I really, I would like to at least say that a better products and even Bill Gross, right? You know, Idea Lab, talk about that. There are multiple things that make a startup works. He talked about timing is one of the biggest thing, but I think one of the big thing that he actually, even if you read as a podcast or idea out of all things is probably the least important at the end of the day. I would say personally, right, in my experience, if you want better products, you need to figure out how to execute the product better, right? That's as simple as that. So with that said, I know you guys are here if you guys are in products or wanting to build products. So again, I want to share what I've learned in my 25 years careers of building products or software. A couple of things that I saw that whether it's enterprises or startup, how they can build faster, how they can make better product, in this case, better features for the users. And last, of course, is spend less money, right? Let me touch on spend less money first, because it's important, right? Especially as a startup or any company, money is probably one of the most constraining factor. The interesting thing that coming from advertising is when you build a campaign or an ad or something like that, right? The funniest thing is when you build that thing, it's going to die. You know it's going to leave. You know it's not going to run in 6 months or a year, right, at most. Product, complete opposite. In fact, you build the product not for it to be die. So the idea of spending less money is arbitrary. It's like how much you want to spend money within a certain time, right? Knowing that if you want to build a product, if you're successful, the best worst case scenario is actually you need to continue to pump money into the product so they get bigger and bigger and bigger. So with that said, I'm going to share a couple of things, three things first. There's something I learned about Power of Three. You know, most people only remember three things. So the first thing about faster build, right? And this is a concept that is introduced to me maybe 10 years ago, the difference between velocity and speed, right? One of the things that we like to say in working with clients is velocity thrills and speed chills. So one of the things that if you look at, and I'll talk more about that, but you know, any physics major or anyone who understands the difference between velocity and speed might resonate with this, right? Speed is just going as fast as you can, right? But you can be going fast in the wrong direction. Velocity can be negative if you're going fast in the wrong direction. So when you're looking at building products, yes, you want to build it fast, but you want to build the things right fast. So you want to make sure that your velocity is going forward, right? So if anyone works with Agile, etc., you can see that the burn down chart, you know, stuff like that, that's all about measuring velocity, right? It's not about, so much about speed. So the concept, when next time people, like someone asks you, like, can we build faster, right? Yeah, you might want to question them, like, do you really want to build faster? Or do you want to move the momentum faster? That's a slight concept difference between that. I'm going to talk about how some of the things, examples of what we've done, or what you could actually do to address this concept. So that's the first concept. The second concept in terms of features, product features, right? There's something we call painkillers versus vitamins. As you can imagine, vitamins are things that are nice to have, right? Yeah, you won't die. You pop a couple of vitamin C, you might get better 10 years from now. But imagine you have a headache. You need a painkillers. And in fact, you know, they become addicted. So when you're building product, right, most people come up with vitamins, actually. Oh, I should do that, right? But one of the things that you might want to focus on is the concept of painkillers. What are the things that make people addicted? So again, I'll talk a little bit more about how the process that we could identify painkillers with the companies that we work with as well. And the third one, I know you talk about MVP, and this might be a controversial subject. In my experience, I have never, ever seen an MVP in public, ever. Building an MVP is not good enough. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. MVP is actually a methodology. It's not a product. So I'll talk a little bit more about that. If anyone know MVP, minimum viable product, it's actually more of a testing and learning process. So why would you throw something into the public? Complete public, right? Just to test and get insight. So again, I'm not challenging the concept of MVP. I'm just challenging the concept of MVP is not good enough for you to launch a product. So those are the three concepts that I'm going to talk about first. So the first one, velocity thrills, speed chills. So here's an example. Because we work with a lot of Fortune 500 companies and some startup, right? And more startup, but there's also always a misconception that startup goes faster. Yes, they might make decisions faster. Doesn't mean that they go faster. So one of the things that these are two kind of platforms that we have built. One for Cisco, obviously a Fortune 50 company, and Ribbon, which is a really nimble startup, started a couple years ago. So they are very similar. They have similar features in terms of, you can find events, you can read news, it has social aspect to it, you can add friends, you can see your profile, etc. Right? One of them, we were able to build 20% more features within the same time frame. And I might be giving it away. And we were able to build that 20% faster for Cisco, not for ribbon, a startup, which is supposed to go a lot faster than enterprise. So one of the reasons why is this. The number one thing that I think, and at least in my experience, right, when you want speed, it's all about alignment. And because at the end of the day, you're building with people, whether it's a founder or someone who has an idea of this, right? If in a startup, misconceptually, you're thinking that, oh, I am only dealing with managing one founder perception. But that's not true. The founder has investors, potentially, but the founder also might not know all the technology, all the creative, and stuff like that. So in fact, when you talk about stakeholders, right, it's not just the founder or just the idea person. You're talking about key people within product, key people within creative, key people within marketing or sales, etc., right? One of the things that I've seen that are so usually people make the mistake of, oh, as long as I manage one person's perception or alignment, then everything goes well, right? So one of the things that I would highly recommend, again, getting alignment never stops, right, from the beginning to the end. But one of the things I would say is face-to-face. You know, in our digital world, right, you do a lot of things digitally on Zoom or whatever. But one of the things that we really, when we work with clients, we really force the stakeholders into a room. At least 2 hours, right? And let them actually sit back and let them hash out all the, what are the goals, right? Who are you targeting for? What are you trying to do? Let them argue, right? The interesting thing is 9 out of 10 times, they've never done this before because they're too nice to each other, right? And all of a sudden, when we are in the room and challenging them, they started fighting, discussing, but in a good way, right? So one of the things I would say is there are three things that you, if you can start a product or even continue to manage a product, right? You need to identify who are the key stakeholders. It's not only the ID person, right? Team that the lead of your tech, the lead of your marketing, the lead of your sales, etc. Get them in a room and let them hash it out. There are exercises, and that's my last talk about product design sprint. There are exercises that you can help get them aligned. But one of the things that I also see is they do speak different languages. A tech guy speaks different languages than an idea guy. One is more left brain, the other one probably more right brain. So create that common language, right? So one of the things that we talk about is, and you will see the next, right? We don't talk about features. We talk about user stories. What can a user do? So just simply dumbing down the language into what can a user do? That create that common language to make sure that they align, right? And the third one is, and I'll dive into that a little bit more, is how do you make decision? That's great. You get alignment in the beginning, but things change, business changes. How do you make decision? Who do we make decision based on this criteria, this criteria, this criteria? Setting all those up front, we've seen wonders just to make the product build go a lot faster. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if any of you guys are in product or project, in this case, actually project management, so there is something called the golden triangle, or the iron triangle, sorry. Three things, right? Scope, schedule, and budget. And it doesn't matter what business you are, startup or enterprise, you still have those constraints. Scope, schedule, budget. If you have more time, then you can squeeze more things in. If you don't have time, you can't squeeze things in. But if you pay more money, then maybe I can do more. So all of a sudden, that iron triangle in terms of project management, and any certified PMP here would probably educate me even more about this. But the idea of this is, even in product, right, there is an iron triangle that you need to understand what are the features, what are the budget, what is the schedule, right? Even though this is a rolling schedule. One of the things that I have always seen is always, almost always, right, scope can change. And scope will change because business changes. But what the founder or even the idea key decision maker, right, they probably have a budget in mind and they need to launch by a certain date. So fix those first. So schedule and budget constraints first and foremost, but expect scope changes, right? Again, going back to the decision making, by looking at those three things, you can probably see that how you can actually make better decisions if you fixate all your decision around these three things. Is this feature, is it going to be help not only help the users, it's going to fit in our budget, our schedule. What happens if you push out the schedule? Do we need to cut out some of the schedule features, etc., right? So one of the things that I know, and I'm not going to dive too deep into it, if you know Agile, which is a really obviously de facto process in software development, consider Agile, not just for development, right? And if anyone's interested, like, talk to me about that. But Agile, what we've seen is Agile is not, you have Agile marketing now, you have Agile, I even use Agile to teach my kids. So there's a lot of things that Agile is not just for development. So concept two, I'm going to go a little faster. So painkillers over vitamins, right? So vitamins are nice to have. Painkillers are addictive. Here's an example. We built a product for the Brewers Association for one of the largest beer festival in the world. And it's been 5 years running. When they first started, it was just a bunch of stuff that you can look at. All the brewers, you can figure out where the venues is, etc., right? So those are all vitamins. But over time, we started realizing why people keep coming back. They actually like to take notes and repeat back on what did I taste last year. Keeping tasting notes, right? So all of a sudden, we start developing and focusing on the painkillers, which is these tasting notes, and creating an interactive way for people to quickly and keep their tasting notes, right? Again, that's the painkillers we didn't even know they need until the product is out. But we started pivot and really, really focusing on that, and now it's become more and more popular because of the painkillers, not because of the vitamins. So one of the things that I would say is double down on the pains, right? So it should go without saying that when you idea, you need to think about your users. I talk about user stories, not features. One of the really powerful concept in product design is the hook model. If you're not familiar with that, definitely I would highly recommend that. It's hookmodel.com. Again, find the hook, right? Trigger external intrinsic triggers that lead people to do something, right? That's actually a pain and the vitamins. If you double down on that, keep looking at what the intrinsic thing that they really care about deep down inside, you might be able to find the pain. So the last concept is building an MVP is not good enough. So let's explain, at least in my opinion, why building an MVP is not good enough. An MVP, the whole concept, even Eric Ries when he started Lean Startup, right? The whole idea of MVP is about testing a product hypothesis with minimum time and effort. So this is not a product. We work with LegalZoom to build an MVP. This is not design. It's just a bunch of boxes with colors. Would you ever launch that? No. LegalZoom would never launch this publicly. Because this is not against the brand guidelines, you probably need to add some pictures on it, etc., etc. So an MVP is really about a hypothesis, minimum time and effort, right? So you don't design, actually. If you're talking about minimum time and effort, you actually need to just focus on testing what the features, right? So why focus on building the design and how it looks and stuff like that? Because all you care about is, do they want this feature? You're not testing UX. You're testing features, validity. MMP, some of you guys might have heard about it. A minimum marketing product. That's what, in my experience, right, every single product out there, even the phase one, right, is an MMP. Why? Because they have a story. They have design. They have content. So all of that needs to be taken into account, right? It's how do you launch a product to market with minimum time and effort. That's a huge difference. Launching a product versus testing a product is a completely two different things. You can build an MVP for internal testing, great. But you don't launch an MVP. So one of the things that we, and again, for a product to be successful, right, is really about psychology. It's the right brain versus left brain. You need to get people to use something. So how do you emotionally capture that emotion response to do that, right? People buy your story, not your product. At the end of the day, when they buy a product, they're buying a piece of your story. Why did I create this product? What can I do for you, right? MVP is for learning and testing. MMP is usually could be a version 1.0 release. But get sales and marketing involved as quickly as possible, right? So that you can understand what an MMP is. This is the last thing I will say. Road mapping, even in Agile or anything, right? Road mapping is an idea that you put all the features, break it down into user stories in this ginormous wall, all digital, that outline a roadmap of a product. It's not optional. Agile talk about if you run Agile without a backlog, without a roadmap, you can't run Agile. But the trick is, how do you get to a roadmap as quickly as possible? So one of the things we've done is leverage Design Sprint. And again, I can talk to you guys separately. That's my last talk about how Design Sprint is allow you to ideate, prototype, and validate faster and cheaper in order to get to a roadmap. But you still need Agile, right? And then to launch it. So the whole idea of Agile actually run across design, concepting, and all the way to development as well, too. I'm going to cut it short, but here's a couple of things I've learned. Again, faster build, better features, spend less money, velocity thrills, speed chills, painkillers over vitamins, and building an MVP, at least in my experience, is not enough. I'll leave you with this. Life's too short to build shitty product. So please don't. Every time I say that, it's like just we've seen enough shitty product out there. There are ways that we can do to make better products. We launched a new, this is my last sales pitch. We launched a new product that we've been testing for enterprises for a long time. It's the concept that born out from Product Design Sprint. So we actually started to work a lot with Idea Lab about this. But if anyone interested in doing that, I'm doing a lot of consultation personally just to see how this might fit in startup. So if you guys are interested in that, just go to that and you can request a 30 minutes free consultation with me. I also want to learn about what the market is doing as well too. So, and that's it.
All right. Thank you so much, Ming. That was amazing. I know for myself, you know, the product teams that I work with on a day-to-day, that execution piece is so critical in creating that process. And then for me, just personally, on the own products that I'm creating as an entrepreneur, the piece about they buy a part of your story as part of your product, that was really powerful. We are going to open it up for Q&A right now. As you all know that have been here before, we have some rules around Q&A to make it as fun as possible for everyone. First rule is that you ask an actual question. If you have comments and stories, you can talk to him after about those. So a brief sentence with a question mark at the end is our rule. So with that, John is going to walk around and get your questions.
You might be wondering why we're still using a microphone, even though you can't hear anything. It's because this is on podcast, so we want the people out there to...
Great talk, but... Oh, so this is for the podcast, not the... Okay, I'll speak up. I'm not Cantonese. So tell us more about how you use Agile process after the product is launched and you're doing new releases.
Sure. So let me step back. So the concept of Agile, again, I came from software development... but there might be even better, you know, kind of agile scrum master here, etc. So I won't touch on that much. But the idea of sprint, right, or even agile, there are a couple concepts that you can't break from agile. One is time, right? It's all about defining how long a sprint is, whether it's 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month, right? The concept of agile is really about how, instead of, you know, how do you eat an elephant, right, one bite at a time. So the idea is then you need to figure out the whole, what we call a product backlog, call that the element, right? So from now to the end of time, at least as you know it, what are all the features that need to be done, prioritized into whether it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 4 weeks sprints, right? So even, and technically, right, to answer your question, a product launch, you never stop launching a product. You never stop building, and on top of that, you might have version 1, 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.3. It doesn't matter what you consider launch, right? Every single launch follow this process. So the whole idea here is, again, whether you launch it and after you launch, right? The assuming that, again, when you're looking at investing in a product, right? The best worst case scenario is you need to figure out what you do after you launch. So how do I improve that? How do I take feedbacks? How do I change? And how do I technical support, right? All that you probably need to still consider when you start, before you launch a product, right? So I would say that concept never stops. In fact, the whole thing that might change is your product backlog, right? What features go in the product will continue changing. But as long as you follow this process of having a backlog that built on top of each other and run in the concept of sprint, you're still running agile at the end of the day.
Over here. Great presentation. Thanks. Three-part question. First, you're talking about Agile as a process, but is it also a project management software? And if not, what project management software do you recommend? And how can I get your PowerPoint?
I'll answer the last one first. I'll put in all my presentation. I put on SlideShare. So I'll tweet about it, or I will send, you know, the team about this. Okay. So Agile, and I might have misspoke too, Agile is not only a process. Agile is actually a methodology. So Agile is a concept, actually, right? So if you look at Agile, started in 2001, I think. There are 10 concepts, 10 rule guidelines of how to run an Agile methodology, right? If you think about a lot of software out there, right? Whether it's Jira or whatever software out there that take the concept of Agile. Agile actually have multiple different flavor. So they have Scrum, you might have heard of that. Scrum, Kanban, Lean is actually another one. So that's multiple flavors of Agile. So when I say Agile is more of a methodology in some sense. So it's not so much a process. Scrum is a process. Kanban is a process. So a lot of software out there, most software teams out there run Scrum because they run only on development. But again, if you're interested in Agile, right, I would argue that unless you just want to silo the Agile in the development team, then Scrum is great. But if you want to look at running Agile as a company, there might be a hybrid of all these different processes out there that would do that, right? So the software, right, the project management tool, we use Jira a lot. Jira, J-I-R-A. Yeah. J-I-R-A. Jira a lot. But honestly, we run Jira and Google Sheets. Those are the two things we run the most to manage product.
Hi, thank you very much for the presentation. My name is Brian Dolan. I'm CEO of Verdant AI. I have a lot of engineers who are very proud of how fast they can write code. So I'm looking for suggestions on how to keep my engineering team on track in the agile development process, because they tend to like grab an idea and run with it and get ahead of the designers. Do you have suggestions? I know this happens everywhere. I've solved it several different ways, but I'd like to hear your solution to that. Thank you.
Yeah, let me just say that it's been a long time since I've been a CTO. So I don't know how this generation works, I guess. Especially, I'm imagining your engineers a little bit younger, et cetera, right? So I have some experience, but not too much experience. But what I've seen, right, is actually it's a psychology that you're playing with. As a previous engineer, right, and I'll speak from my personal experience. The thing why I want to build things fast and do things in silo, etc., not because we want to, because we can. As an engineer, you can do things like that, right? Because you live in a black hole. And in fact, most people don't even know what the heck I'm doing as an engineer, right? So it is a little bit of ego, at least in my experience, in terms of doing things fast. Collaborations is something that, especially, if you trying to shoot up to the top. Most, I'm not going to say all, a lot of work culture don't promote. They promote what we call firefighter in some sense. Oh, this person does so much, great. So we're going to promote them, right? That's a firefighter mentality. But in Agile, actually promotes, in a true Agile, right, actually promotes team aspect. So that's a psychology thing that I would say, is how do you not beat their ego, right? But give them ownership in some sense. Let them not only don't dictate. First thing I've seen, right? Most companies on this who write the product backlog, probably not the engineers. Get them to help them write the product backlog. Get them ownership. Get them accountable, so that they buy into what they were doing first. If they buy into what they're doing, then the chances they will actually seek be held accountable. And if they're being held accountable in some sense, they realize that they probably need partnership or collaboration. They need help. So again, it's a long journey, but there's multiple things that we have done. But one of the things that I've seen that really work is don't write product backlog silo. Write it with your engineers, right? Get them buy-in. Even though it's a perception only and fake it, even though you know exactly what you're going to build, at least talk to them. This is what I'm thinking. What do you think, right? So the idea of that, giving that sense of ownership, have done wonders in my experience. So,
I was just curious, in terms of going back to sort of your process, but not specifically Agile, more like with the customer, are you, are you generating the products or these digital products and then handing them back to the client for maintenance, or are you sometimes also having to do the maintenance?
And oh, you're talking
are these,
about,
yeah, and
my
are
company?
These. Yeah, and okay. are these products then central to their business or more sort of on the marketing side of their business? I was just curious.
So most companies are not, they don't build digital products. They might, like take Cisco, for example, since I talk about it, right? Cisco, what company is that? What product do they build? They build networking products. They don't build software. They build software that runs on networking product, right? But they still need digital tools, sales tool. Instead of buying Salesforce or something, they might have something unique that they need to build. A marketing tool, they might need that. An HR tool, we actually built the HR tool as well too. You can either buy it or you can build it in-house to build it, or you can hire someone to do it, right? So most companies, especially as I see larger enterprises, right? So that's two-part answer. Larger enterprises, they know what business they're in, right? But they still need tools everywhere. So we're not going to go in and help them build a router interface, but we're going to help them build a tool for the sales team to sell that, for example. Or we're going to go in and build a tool for them so that they can engage their internal team to educate them how to do it, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the larger enterprises. The second part of your question for a smaller company, so for a larger company, we build it and we launch it for them. And the goal is to pass it back to them. They might build a team internally to manage it, et cetera, right? Or they might hold keep us a retainer for a year or two, et cetera, right? Until they build the team, right? So that's what enterprises. Startup, it depends. Especially if it's a funded startup, then they would probably eventually need to build an internal team. So we come in to as consult. What are the product that you need to build? Design it, build it, so that in some sense they can cut us loose afterwards. Or you can continue to help us manage it a little bit. We have all the process. In fact, with startup, we actually go in and teach them this process. And then so they can run. Our goal is not to, as a business, right? Like, I personally hate maintaining product because it's just technical support a lot of times. So our business is really about building product and launching it and making sure that we pass off to the client as efficiently as possible.
Right here.
Yeah.
Thank you for... Doesn't work?
No. That's no. For the podcast.
Okay. Yeah, it's for look.
Okay, thank you for...
You look better.
Grating.
I look better.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for great presentation. Thank you for great presentation. My question is, we're working with 17 people, developers, we're building a product... Uh-huh. It's 17 people. But what we understand that when they develop, some of them make less mistake when we go to testing. Like they develop the product, they develop the features, but doesn't matter how much time they put, like this developer has more experience,
mm-hmm.
but
sure.
makes more mistake when user start to use the product.
Sure.
Like, but we don't know how to train everyone to make less mistake because it costs us a lot. Basically, like, even they do really sure. fast and they are really experienced,
yeah.
but testing team going back, it's much more costly than the like the, without any experienced developer that make it right in the first or second time. How we can train entire team to make less mistake?
Can I ask a quick question first? I'm guessing you don't have a technical background?
No.
Okay. So on behalf of all people with technical background, no offense, but we don't make mistakes. Because because what you define as mistake, what you're saying mistake is, people don't want to use it this way. They want to use it the other way. And it's designed not that way. As an engineer, my responsibility is code, integrity, technology. You can't expect me to have also right brain to understand how a user use a product. You can't do that. So when you say mistake, right, if it's a technical code error mistake, sure. First of all, that should not have been caught at the end, because if you have managed the team or CTO or something like that, because they do code revisions or review every single cycle, so there should be no quote-unquote mistakes. There might be bugs. All product has bugs. But what I'm saying is bugs, usually, unless it's functional stuff, most of the bugs I've seen, and tell me if I'm wrong, when you report bugs, right? When the user click this should happen. That's a bug. That's not. You never told me this when you click this should happen. You never told me that. So that's what I'm saying, that like a lot of the mistakes, that when you define mistakes, right, from an engineering standpoint, it's not a mistake, because coding-wise, it's the right thing to do. What I've seen mistakes is, you're talking about user experience mistakes. You're talking about design mistakes. You can't expect a developer to know that, because they don't. They're not user experience designer. So when you expect a developer to be a user experience designer, so it's like you're calling a designer, why can't you code? So on behalf of all engineers, again, we can talk separately about that, right? I've been an engineer before. Yeah. But again, there are some engineers that are maybe experienced, right, to your point. Some engineers that are really, really good at coding, they build it really fast, right? But they have no concept of design. They have no concept of user experience because they build things so fast, right? But there are also some engineers that maybe more balanced on the right brain because they're intrigued in design and stuff like that. They start building things as, this is a fast way to do it. But if I do it this way, the user might like it better, right?
This is my question. How we can teach? Like what kind of like material we have?
So you try to teach user experience design concept to engineers. That's what you're asking. That's what I'm hearing.
Because it decreases the cost.
Of course it does. But there are consequences. Yeah. No, so again, your goal is to decrease cost.
What?
So you have to sacrifice quality if you decrease cost. So what I'm saying is, yes, then you know what? If you want to decrease cost, have them focus on just a technical team and bring in a user experience contractor and work with them. That probably will save you a lot more money than trying to train someone that is pure, really good in coding and ask them to design. That's my 2 cents.
Thanks, Ming. Yeah. One last question. So you're talking about product development, and we had a lot of people that raised their hands that have an idea that would like to develop that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about tying what you just discussed this morning to fundraising? Because, you know, what is a realistic amount of capital that's going to be required just to, you know, get started, get to that MVP? And then, as you mentioned, as you start reaching the velocity and speed mm-hmm. aspects, you're going to be spending more money.
Sure.
But investors are going to be looking for certain milestones before they're willing to put in mm-hmm. additional money. So things like proof of concept, market yeah. validation, things like yeah. that.
So, and that's, thank you, John, that the concept of MVP, right, if you get to, in our experience, right, and investors just need to understand your ideas, so they don't actually need to see the product. in some sense. But it's how do you interactively understand, teach, show them what the product is. In fact, that's what a product design sprint was built for, and MVP is built for. We built MVP in 5 days. We built it in cost, right? $20,000. In fact, if you want, if you have a very savvy investors, we build it in $5,000. So again, anyone can launch a product or test the concept of a product, right? Not everyone can launch a product. So I would say that if your first goal is to build, to start building a product, there's a lot of risk that you're taking on. It's a one-way street. Once you raise money, you cannot stop raising money. So one of the things that you're looking at is before you raise money, if you decide to raise money, let's test that concept first, right? To make sure there's a marketplace, etc. You don't, in my, again, speed, chills, velocity, thrills. MVP, there's no reason in my experience that you cannot build an MVP in 5 days for proof of concept. So the cost over there, right? You know, five full-time, 5 days, full days. Let's say you're three people, plus all those stuff, 10, 15, 20 grand, maybe. If you're talking about getting to an MVP, right? Actually, product to launch. We've launched product in 3 months, 60 to 90 days, going through MVP to MVP. And I would say that if you want to make sure that the product is a true MVP, the version one, you're probably looking at between 65 to 90 grand in the first 90 days to make sure you pay all the people and all the testing and marketing and stuff like that, right? So again, that's why when you think about raising Angel or Series A, you know, now I know Series A is a lot more money now, you know, $8 million, you can call it Series A, which is ridiculous. But like, if you're talking about Angel, right, the three apps money, you know, you can probably ask your friends and family and stuff like that. If you can, you know, raising 90 grand, is it hard? Maybe. But is it impossible? No. So you don't actually need to go to institution money, at least in my experience, right, to get an MMP out. So that's from a money standpoint.
All right, great.